Okay.
Okay, well, good evening, everybody. We're going to call the Administrative Control Board from Mountain Region Water Special Service District to order here at 6:08 officially. Do we have any public input tonight?
Nope.
Okay. So, number two, we have, are you Jason?
I am Jason.
All right.
Wow.
I think you were here last year.
Thank you very much. I'd like to be at the top of the agenda. This is really at the top of the agenda. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come in and present the Trust Accountability Program Award again for the fourth consecutive year.
Hey.
That is really amazing. We've done this for 6 years, and you've got it for the last four. That is a great accomplishment in my estimation. We only have, let's see, 4 years. There's probably less than 10% of the trust membership that have achieved this goal. It's a big thing. And you say, what is this award all about? It's about safety and risk management. The trust, you partner with the trust for a long time for your insurance. My job with the trust is to help loss prevention, help keep you out of trouble, provide risk management services, training, and those things. Several years ago, we sat back and said, what are the things that every local government agency needs to have in place that will prevent the bad losses that we see out there? And we put the TAP program around that. We tweaked it a little bit here and there over the years. We also threw in a little carrot to get our local government agencies around the state to participate in this. We give you some money back. We give you a chunk of your liability premium back. You've got a check for, already received a check for $1,758.
Woo.
So a nice little chunk of change, but I'm here to tell you that really pales in comparison to the real money, which is preventing losses, keeping your employees healthy, safe on the job, not having them injured, and avoiding things, like car crashes and lawsuits and all of that. And as we've seen over the years, the members of the trust that do these things perform better. Are they going to have problems here and there? Yeah, that's why we partner together. That's why you have insurance, all of those things. But this is a tried and true thing. And just a couple of examples. One is the Town Safety Committee. That gets together regularly and focuses on safety, looks at incidents that have happened, even simple things like monitoring your driver records, make sure your drivers all have a valid driver's license and that they are that they don't have a really terrible record. Anyway, I've talked a long time, but my purpose here tonight is not really talk about the program as much as highlight the team, staff, and really thank them for their efforts. Thank you, of course, as a board for supporting them in doing this. But there's a lot of effort that goes into this. This is a voluntary program. It's not anything that's required. And they made the extra effort to do that. And so really everybody on the team that is here has participated in this and put effort in one way or another, as well as every team member that's out there. So congratulations. Thank you so much for your efforts. And appreciate your membership and partnership with the trust.
Nice work, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Brian, you probably got the most people out there that can cause the most mischief. Right?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah.
Nice job.
Okay. Well, move on to number three here. Do we need to go into executive session tonight?
Not tonight.
So number four, skip five is our consent agenda. We have the minutes, the check register, PO.
We do have a PO that does warrant some discussion tonight. Are there any comments or questions on the minutes or the check register?
What is the T-flock?
I had the same question. I mean, it's part of the flock is the stuff that comes out from the...
T-flock's the coagulant, right?
Yeah. No, aluminum chloride hybrid. Yeah. It's what's in your deodorant.
If you use that kind of stuff and didn't think it caused cancer.
We put it in the water, that way you don't have to use it.
Oh, see?
So was the manufacturer a vendor of it or something?
They take everything and they put a tea on it.
Quite simply, it helps the particles in the water to combine, Karen, so it's easier to remove through the membrane.
That was my only question.
And I explained it in that little report that you had out, the clean water report.
Yep. Anything else on the minutes or the check register? Okay, thanks, Bob. So we have a PO tonight for 71,000, what does it say?
475.
So a quick follow-up. As you recall, at the last board meeting, we went out to bid for two waterline projects, one up in Stagecoach, one in Glenwild and Red Hawk. Following the last meeting, we pulled the Glenwild Red Hawk project out of that, out of the scope for the bid. And because of the land issues and the need to get an easement, I wanted to get the Stagecoach project moving as quickly as possible. We went back out for bids on just the Stagecoach portion. We got four responses. The prices ranged from $71,475 to $155,500.
Wow.
The contractor that bid at $71,475 is Extreme Excavating and Landscaping. We've worked with them quite a bit over the last few years. We've had great experience, so we'd like to award the contract to Extreme.
What was the engineer's estimate?
The engineer's estimate was
$79,200.
Okay. So we'd like approval of the PO and then authorization for me to sign the contract and provide the notice of award. They came in at $71,475. The engineer's estimate was $79,200.
Just out of curiosity, if you would take the three high bids, what was the average of the three high bids?
I'll just read them off. We had $71,000, $88,000, $102,000, and $155,000.
Okay.
So we had three that were, kind of on par and one that was significantly higher.
They didn't need the work.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Any other questions? How do we sit budget-wise? Where does this come from?
I mean, this is part of our plans, capital improvements for this year. So our capital budget, we're significantly underspent currently on our capital budget.
Was this in the capital budget?
It was.
What the 79 was?
No, the 79 was the engineer's estimate. The capital budget that we had, the placeholder for both of these projects was undervalued at
150,
is that what it was? The engineer's estimate for both projects combined are a little higher than that. It's 100 and it's 80 and 100. It's 180 or so.
And you're holding a contingency?
Yeah, the contingency on the engineer's estimate is on top of that 79. So.
Okay.
Is there any other questions? Is there a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
I second.
So that was Tim made the motion, Karen seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, so that was unanimous, Marty.
Perfect.
And so did that include authorization to sign the agreement? Or because we approved, the motion was to approve the consent agenda.
I would like to have.
Let's just be clear on that.
I want to be able to sign the agreement and provide the notice of award.
That was included in the motion. Okay. So, I'm going to sign this. Lisa, would you like me to sign this PO? So, number six. Are there any questions on our department update? Where did the pack?
Got a question on the community water meters. I mean, when you're digging into it now, is it what you were expecting, or is it is there less known about?
I didn't expect much of a change, other than the accountability changes for people to be in charge of their water usage. They can monitor it. They can see leaks. They can sign up for the leaks. That's going to be a huge game changer for us. You know, instead of the 30-day cycle on reading. But as far as the other meters being inaccurate, I don't see that. If they're very close to what they were using, you know what I mean, compared year to year, they're pretty close. The problem with our old meters was the technology is no longer supported, and also the battery life was nearing the end. So we were losing, you know, the transponders that send out the radio waves were actually, they're really on the end of their life. And they're not, you can't replace them. So if this is a really great system, I think we're going to have much less water loss in the future. But as far as noticing, like, you know, this meter, this year, the same house with the same family, you know, similar usages, it's not up.
But when the deal closed on community water, then all of their employees just disappear?
Yes.
And then we were left with trying to figure out what we had.
Brian, from a construction standpoint, can you just comment on the meter installations? And Marty, you too, on how the meter installations have gone, where they, I think that's maybe the root of Tim's question.
So, our master meters, we haven't started yet. We're not going to start that until after the loan closes in October. We've been doing a few meters over there. They're all inside meters. We've tackled all our commercial meters. We haven't really had any problems except, you know, some pipes breaking and stuff, but everything's meters here over there. We just recently, yesterday, installed a master irrigation meter, which is a huge improvement over there. That takes probably 2 weeks to dig it up and do all this piping. It's quite a nightmare, but for the most part, it's going pretty good.
So you don't have anybody from Community Water over there saying,
no,
there's a meter down below here, or it
we
just all disappeared?
We do. You mean unknown meters?
Mm-hmm.
We actually have all their meters, I think, found that were outside townhomes and homes. We've found all those and changed all those out, except for the big master meters we're still waiting on to be delivered. And then we're in the process of trying to have a plumber get a spec out to plumbers and have them do the townhomes in Red Pine and the Park West townhomes. There's 60 in Red Pine and 30 in Park West Village. Those are going to need to have a plumber actually do the work because they're in line. They're probably going to have to change the shutoffs, which are going to be a solder joint at one end. So, they're in really difficult locations, and we didn't know what we were getting into. We've been able to get into several of them, for at least four of each, and we feel really comfortable with what we're going to come across, you know, and it's something that we need help with.
The bottom line behind this, I just wonder if there's any pressure on staff. I mean, if you got a bunch of people that are over there doing this stuff, and they used to be doing something else on the other system, either that's not getting done, or we have excess capacity to do this. So
it's the former, you know.
Okay.
Basically, to provide a little more dialogue to it. Yeah, I mean, we're stretched thin. Our staff's working really hard to try to, you know, double duty with getting community water up to speed, as well as maintain our priority responsibilities.
So those are not suffering because of this. We're still doing the priority things on the on the rest of the system.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, things that previously weren't quote unquote required. You know, like I said, we prioritize the things that need to be done, and we're able to prioritize this.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions on the department updates?
fire mitigation plan was in your notes?
Community wildfire protection plan, is that what you're...
Yeah, who are the stakeholders that are reviewing that for you?
I attended a meeting with Glenn Wright from the county council, Janet Young, who's the Tom Fisher's assistant county manager, Bryce Boyer, who is...
Fire warden.
The
fire warden for Wildland Fire District.
Fire warden for Wildland Fire District. The North Summit Fire Chief. Mike Adams from Park City Fire District, who's the fire marshal. And Bryce Boyer is leading the effort to, or I should say steering the stakeholders to get inputs to put together a county-level community wildfire protection plan. So I provided inputs from our perspective. I modeled those off of Marin County's plan. They're known to have a solid CWPP, and they had a water district that had input into it, so I looked at that one. I haven't received any feedback on the information I provided.
Okay.
Thanks. You know, I had a question on the technical, the tech. There was a statement in there that said moving concurrency to the county health server. What does that mean?
So,
I didn't know what it meant.
So the concurrency program, every year we have to submit a report that shows, to comply with the county concurrency ordinance, that shows how much, what our sources production is, less our demand of customers, and that report is used to show how many new building permits can be issued. And we have housed that on our servers, and the county health department administers that program, and it was thought it's best to move it from our servers to theirs. It's kind of a long, it's taken a long time. But we're almost there.
So they will maintain it?
They will maintain it.
Put all the information in a...
Yeah. It's basically everything now is done on Google worksheets. That way it's easy for the county to see the updated numbers, and then they're password protected so that each water system accesses their own, and the county can see all of them. It's worked out pretty good.
Okay, I just didn't know what it meant. I was reading it on the report.
So I thought it fit into if the water provider could sign the plat.
No, that's a separate.
That's not.
This is. Yeah, this deals with, do you have the water at the time that a person needs a permit?
These are the commitment, water concurrency commitment letters, as opposed to will serve letters. Will serve letters are those that you issue at the time of plat approval. But the commitment of service letters, that's what they have to produce to get a building permit. That's what concurrency monitors.
We're trying to get concurrency. Pretty much I have been the concurrency system. We're trying to get the county health.
Well, we better get that fixed then, quick.
So do they check on will serves? Is there any?
They don't. No. I mean, I guess the county development department.
Yeah, I mean, there are repercussions if you issue a will serve letter and sign the plat and then don't provide service. There are actual criminal penalties.
Will Summit Water be subject to those if they can't serve?
If they can't serve, unless they get a replacement, somebody's going to have to replace them. If they can't serve the plat. And certainly no building permits will be issued.
Okay.
Hey, thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Thanks for those updates. Number seven, financial management. Lisa Hoffman talking about June.
Yes.
Okay. How's June?
June, it was good to have a change. I'll say that. You know, you guys have all seen very hot, dry summers. We've all experienced that and large overages in our budget. So we're going to see a month with what happens when you have a cool, wet spring. So, but we plan for this. I mean, it's in our budget. Currently, we are, our change in net position is $204,833. Which is still just over $500,000 above budget. As you can see, that's primarily related to lower expenses than we had budgeted. We'll go into a little bit more detail on each one of the revenue and expense lines below, but just as an overall, you know, with that wet spring we had, our revenue is definitely still, we're still doing okay because we have higher interest expense or interest income. And impact fees are above, but I think we're going to be okay in light of what I see in the weather forecast for the next foreseeable future. So compared to last year, yes, our revenues are down pretty significantly. The majority of that, as we'll see later, is really related to impact fees. We had a large impact fee come in for a hotel last year, for LB6 last year, LB4, that we haven't seen this year, of that kind of large impact fee. You scroll down, Doug.
But historically, we're not going to catch up, right? I mean, don't people just water their lawn the same number of times a day and the same amount of water, whether it's hot or
yep, and
real
and
hot?
Yeah, probably not. We won't see anything close to last year, but in our budget, we use, you know, we use an average. So we could see a little bit of a pickup if we stay hot longer, which we've been tending to see the fall push out further. So if that happens, we could be okay. But that's why we have reserves. I don't think we're going to have to, you know, at this point, I don't think we're going to have to dip into them. I think
You made it sound like because it's going to be hot, we might be able to make up this difference. I think that because it's hot, we're going to go back to the normal usage going forward.
Yeah, right. But we also have increased customers.
That's right.
So, and we've also picked up community water, which we did have in the budget, but I think we'll watch it very carefully as we move forward.
October is always a wild card. Sometimes October are really good revenue. You just can't predict.
As you can see, retail sales were down 128,000 year to date. Promontory has taken about half of what they normally do, so we're down 46,000. Park City is right in line, and Denver Basin. Development-related collections are running higher than we budgeted to this point. Majority of that is impact fees. And then other revenue, as I mentioned, interest income is higher based on our higher cash balances. Compared to last year, you'll see the change. We are down in water sales, in promontory, and overall residential. And then development-related collections, we talked about the high impact fee we collected last year in the beginning of the year. Scroll down to expenses. So on the expense side, total cash expenditures, excluding depreciation, we're at $351,000 below budget. That's primarily due to, we've seen lower repair and maintenance costs. So far, we have lower personnel costs due to positions that we had anticipated in the budget, but this year we have not replaced those positions.
You'll save a lot of money when I'm gone.
And lower power costs, which are just attributable to lower usage. Compared to last year, our OM&R is, our operations, maintenance, and repair is lower than last year, too. Like I mentioned, personnel and power costs mainly. Our non-OM&R, we are also under budget, largely related to the severance payment that we made to Andy last year in the first part of the year, in May. So our personnel, our non-OM&R expenses are running lower than last year. And the non-operating expenses, fairly in line, not much difference there to budget and from last year. Go down, Doug. Cash, we currently have $14.7 million in our accounts. It's down slightly from last month just due to scheduled debt payments, which were made June 15th on three of our bonds. So we put 1/12 of that away each month in a trust account held by Zions Bank, so they just made the payments this month. So debt reserves held by the trustee were the only really significant change from the previous month. And compared to prior year, that $2.6 million variance is largely attributable to operating cash due to the sales that we saw last year. Debt reserves held by the district are down slightly. That primarily is related to the carbon and membranes that we used reserves out of there to pay for that, so that amount is down. Regionalization reserves have just gone up from our normal quarterly contributions, and capital facility reserves, our normal scheduled annual contributions that we need to make. We will be taking $250,000 from that account this summer as we have our last meter order in. It's in, but we haven't actually received them yet, I think shortly, or maybe we have.
They arrived today.
Oh, they came today.
Just the last one.
Part of that's just the endpoints. The meters were shown yesterday.
Okay.
This is the last of that. Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
We all, yeah. We're also
that's one of the fun.
Yeah. So I think, based on discussions with staff, we'll have Summit Park done soon? Or Summit Park done?
Summit Park's about probably.
Yeah, we have like 256 yet to do, and I did probably 20 today. So they're cranking up out, but yeah.
Summit Park will probably be done in another couple of weeks.
Yeah, they're pretty fast, these guys.
And then we're just kind of left with the indoor meters that we're trying to schedule
appointments. Silver Spring, Blackhawk, and Spring Creek, what's left?
So we'll be capitalizing, and, you know, we can look at that later on the capitalization sheet. But we should get the majority, hopefully significantly in by the end of the year, and then we'll try to schedule those stragglers as we can.
How do we communicate that to the customers that we're going to be changing their meters?
On the inside meters, we have to make appointments. When we're on the outside meters, we leave a letter and a door hanger, and it explains exactly what they need to do to set up their IOM water account, which allows them to view their water usage.
After it's been done.
Yes. Yeah. And we have, I know it's a little lagging right now because we just are putting in so many a day that, getting people to sign up, it takes a bit. People just are, ones that are tech savvy want it right away, and the others just kind of sit on it. But
they don't have to do it,
but we encourage them because, when they have a leak, we get a hold of people, and we'll tell them, hey, you've got this leak going on, and then they're like, well, how do you know, and how can I see you, and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's a very helpful tool.
Okay, so if we're back to...
Yeah, so we can move down... document. We have customer growth. So this just shows our customer counts to date. So in 2019, we have 63 new connections. Our four-year average is 57, so we're about 10% high. We have six more than we normally have. The new units, we had multiple dwelling units. That's why the unit count is higher. We haven't had any of those come on yet this year. So our new unit count is at 63. Total collections, our impact fees are at $439,000. We budgeted for the year $700,000, so I think we're going to be close to hitting that. We did have $50,000 just come in for discovery that's going on up behind the Wylaman School, and we anticipate another $50,000 from them. So we're looking pretty good on impact fees. we're obviously, compared to prior years or our four-year average, we're down. Impact fee collections have been at record levels the last few years. But we knew that was going to come down, and we budgeted accordingly. Average per connection is down $6,977 from $10,947. That's really in large part due to Silver Creek coming on, and Silver Creek is, they have prepaid connections already sold over there. So those are coming in. So as we have new connections, I think we have about 23 new connections of the 63 that are already, they were already prepaid. So we don't receive an impact fee with that. We simply get a letter, and they're using a month off the letter. So that's good. We're getting rid of that out there. Promontory lot assessments, we have 17 and 18 is that four-year average. So we're right on track. Water consumption. So here you'll see for through June, or this is just for the month of June, is the top section there. We're down 21% compared to the four-year average. Obviously, you can see 94.6 million gallons last year, 56.1 million gallons. Definitely a large difference from last year. But overall, from a four-year average perspective, we're 21% below. Promontory used about half, and 45% less than their four-year average. And Park City is close to what they used last June, but yeah, as we've known, that's been kind of off and on when they're taking that. So they're close to what they're doing last year, which is what we anticipated. Year-to-date, we are down 3.7% from, you know, through June on usage, 21 acre feet. So we'll continue to monitor that. Promontory, again, down about half from what we would normally see. And Park City is running close to last year, but lower or higher than their four-year average. And Summit Water's right on track. I think they'll take their full 800 acre fee. I'm sure the rest of that will get picked up by the end of the year. Capital projects, community water, we haven't spent much more than what we saw last month. We've got that well, we're waiting to get going on, I think in the fall, and then we'll have our other bid package out for the rest of the capital improvements, which will be done next year.
Did the loan close?
The loan won't close until we currently have an application for a conditional use permit for the valve station we need to build in Hidden Creek. And we can't go out to bid on that project until we have a permit to build it. So we're going to get the conditional use permit and go out to bid. We need the bid pricing to close the loan.
So this is just a budget at 2.6.
It's not
a budget. Okay.
Our meter changeout program, we talked about that a little bit already. We're close to finishing that up. We're committed to date of $1.3 million. We'll add a little bit more to that by the end of the year. The Silver Creek line we have in and it's functioning. I just saw the invoice from Gerber, so that's been encumbered. We'll get that paid, and we can capitalize the rest of that Silver Creek project.
Is that helping with bringing flow across?
We just did a flow and pressure test, and we brought more water out of promontory than has ever been done before. So it's working as planned.
That's a big deal to get that.
We just doubled the capacity out of promontory.
We would have really been hurt with the Silver Creek development. Money well spent.
He said money well spent.
Oh, I thought he had a question. Sorry. The Summit Park, I'm not sure I mentioned in my. Summit Park isn't happening, is that correct? So we had originally budgeted $200,000 to participate with the county and the sewer district in getting that done over there. Correct me if I'm wrong, they had a bid opening and nobody bid.
Yeah,
Daniel added out the projects.
So we're holding off.
Hey, Scott.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah. If you try flagging where the microphone is in front of you, thinking I can hear you great, but I have to
come. Is that better, Bob?
A little better.
This is not better. Is this the mic? I think the mic's on the
Like, I can hear Doug really well.
Try.
And I can hear Marty, but I can't hear me.
Is this better?
Oh, way better. Yeah.
Okay. So the Summit Park will carry over until next year, that budget. I think it's in scheduled.
My guess is that they'll attempt to bid the project again next year. Okay. They may make some changes to try to get some more interest.
Weber Bison Interconnect, is that underway, Scott?
Yeah, we just received the 90% design drawings from Park City. Okay. So it's in design. The expected construction was to happen this year. So,
okay. We just haven't seen anything. And the land acquisition is, I think we're close to being able to.
We're close. Chris has the subdivision plat in the sewer district's hands for their final review before it goes to the county.
Okay. So we'll spend that budget there. The vehicle, we received, I think we outfitted one vehicle, and we have a dump truck. So we're still on budget with our capital projects, no big changes. And that's it. Unless any questions.
What was the second land acquisition for $222,000?
Oh, that's the piece that we bought where the well site is.
Okay.
So Scott, they're just finishing that up, and then we'll spend the majority of that money.
So that's the improvements as well as the land.
Okay. Yep. Got it.
And we haven't closed yet.
Okay, well, thank you, Lisa.
Okay, you're welcome.
Number eight, we have an update on community water.
Marty, do you want to kind of kick this off?
Well, we were able to get all of the bills out, and we're using all the tax notices addresses because that's the only source of information we had since they didn't send bills to all of the customers in community water. And typically that's the address that legally you use for all notifications and things. And so we're finding out that a lot of the tax notices are going to places that can't receive mail. So they must be getting those tax notices back at the county as well. So we're working on that with the HOA. We have email addresses and things like that. So we're working on those little silly things, but eventually, you know, the next month or so, we should have everything underway. But everyone, you know, the bills went out, and they went out correctly with all of the nuances with their master billing, master meter billing. And you've got 300 units over there in Hidden Creek that get a certain percentage of every bill of the entire meter reads. So they all add up to 100%, but some units might get 0.43% of that total meter usage, and another unit might get 0.8, another unit get, it's ridiculous. But we were able to get that all pulled together with finance, and so we're really pleased that everything went out. We're just working on silly things like addresses, and that's normal. So we're just working on that. We hope to have, you know, this first month is the first month you find out all those weird things, and then we'll correct them. But things are going really well. Please, and the guys are working very hard trying to get all the meters read that we could get read and changed out. So this month, on all the ones they changed out, will be our own meter readings, which will be really great. It was surprising for us to find out that a lot of the meters that they had meter readings for, you know, on their spreadsheets, weren't anywhere near in real life what those numbers, you know, they didn't match up at all. We have no idea what they were meeting.
Somebody was estimating.
Yeah, in fact, in one of the vaults, it's like, okay, keep taking pictures of all the meter faces every day, and let's see which one is moving. Because it was just, it's crazy. So, and that's a company that's guaranteed like a percentage profit from the PSC. And here they have all these meters broken, so it's been very interesting. So
when are the new customers going to start receiving their bill? When are they going
They got their first bill probably the first week in, Friday they did.
Friday.
Has there been any outrage?
Got any calls yet?
The calls have been very
outrageous. Yes, it stopped ringing all day long.
Kudos to Marty and her staff because the phone has not stopped
ringing. Did they do any kind of an announcement ahead of time?
Yes, and you know what's interesting is we chose to have them send that letter out. And what's interesting to me is we would have known that these addresses didn't work then, but I don't think they were sent out. I think she sent them out on her list because we would have known that these units that had the tax notice, because that's the addresses we use, and that's what we, you need to use these right addresses. Okay, we'll do that. Well, all of the return mail would have come to us. We would have known that. But so this is kind of interesting. And they did have all notifications. We put notices up in all of the clubhouses. You know, this is how you get a hold of us. You know, here's our website. But you know what? Of all the calls, we haven't had any angry, crazy, difficult calls. They have just been, you know, helping us with addresses, with emails, phone numbers.
Not like the guy who said he was going to come in and kill us.
No, I mean, they really have. I mean, they're not happy. It's a lot of money, more than they've ever had. But they understand. And they are not surprised with how Community Water had been run and how, you know, hey, we're here. We will call us anytime you have a question. We will help you. And they're really, I think, seem happy. So, I mean, it's been, even though it's super, super busy and we've been putting in tons of hours, it still has been a good experience for our staff, other than they're just tired.
So far.
So far, so far, so good.
Marty did get out ahead of it and contact all the HOAs too, and we did our best to try and inform the customers before we made this.
Yeah. So
we billed just under $50,000 to the Community Water customers, so about $31,000 in base, a little over 5,000 in usage, and then about 13,000, a little over 13,000 for infrastructure for the loan. So we have to make a loan payment.
No, $27.
Yeah, 27.
Yeah.
So how did that fit our estimate of what it was we were going
to? Really, really close. I mean, we expected more usage to come in. Like, we projected more about $50,000 a month with usage. This was 50,000 with infrastructure. So yeah, so we'll pick up some more. We'll probably pick up another 5 or 10,000 if we can get everything metered.
But it was only 2 weeks of usage because we picked them up June 1st and we go 15th to 15th, so perfect. We only had 2 weeks. So it'll be a larger number next time.
And they water a lot though.
Yeah, a lot. And that'll change.
Yeah, they'll change that.
They start seeing their bills.
I know. The town comes there, they had a small leak for about a day or 2 days, but well, they probably had it all along. They didn't even know about it because the meters weren't working. But what's interesting is those condos in just that short window of time used over 20,000 gallons of a pop to 30 condos. So it was like 600,000 gallons divided by 30 condos. That's a lot of water. You know, so it'll be interesting. They'll either change their habits or they'll be spending a lot on water.
Okay, well, thank you, Marty.
Oh, that's a
nice update. Sounds like it's going really well.
Yeah.
Okay, number 9, we have a consideration to approve the impact fee facility plan.
Okay, just to bring you up to, I sent out a memo. There was some little changes we made on the one you have, went out a week ago. And then there's two changes that we did yesterday.
Yeah,
really. We'll talk about that. What happened since the last one you saw is we received our concurrency rating, which is this 0.72 gallons per minute for ERC. we were using for a source a rating 0.79 GPM. So what we decided to do was make the source have the same 10% reserve that we do on water rights in case we have a prolonged drought or Weaver Basin cuts some of our contracts, which they are talking about doing in the future. So that 10% buffer, we felt, let's just include that in the source as well because they're both tied together. And so by taking the 0.72 and using it, it calculates at that, but by backing it up with the concurrency number, which is 0.72, and if we add 10% of that, we're back to the 0.79. So we just changed some wording to kind of give us a little more strength on that 0.79 and justify it a little bit better. Then there was just some other crazy things that didn't really change anything, some mistakes I made when I got digging into it.
So that 0.79 is the peak source day. Requirement?
Yeah, the peak day source requirement.
Per
ERC.
ERC.
Averaged over all of our ERCs. We need that much source. When we develop a new well, if the well over by the tank that we do is 720 gallons a minute on a peak, I have 1,000 ERCs.
And then you keep updating this calculation.
This calculation changes a bit every year, but it's actually been coming down for us compared to other water systems. In the concurrency program, it's just because our customers over the years use less per ERC, and they're giving us credit for that, which means we can issue more letters. So it's a kind of, you know, it could go up a little bit in the future, but it could drop more.
Okay. I would expect it to continue to come down as we add higher density in Silver Creek Village.
Yeah. Silver Creek and Community Water ERCs will probably push it down. Silver Creek Village has very little outdoor water.
So somebody checked every one of the tables in there to quality control to verify that they're getting the same output.
Steve and Lisa have.
Okay.
Are we getting the same results?
We're getting the same. We're doing good. We're coming up with the same numbers.
Okay. It's actually one of my more simple spreadsheets. It hasn't got a lot of intense math in it.
Whatever.
I have some. So, with that said, Lisa and Steve met with Zions Bank, and we've been mulling over. And Lisa's going to explain in a little bit why our impact fee, there's going to be a big credit that's going to reduce the fee when Zions Bank reviews our numbers too. There's going to be a big credit issued that's going to drop that fee considerably. And as we started looking at this, Susie?
Mm-hmm.
At Zions, questioned a few things. One of them is our source, our water rights component. Ever since Mountain Regional did the first one of these back in 2003 or something, I can't remember when, we've always assumed that new users would get kind of a mix of Lost Canyon water and water rights that we bought back in 2002. I'm getting my dates probably off a bit. And as we started looking at this, we realized we need to use development. The debt that we issued for these water rights, as you look on the sheet, is quite large. I mean, cash plus debt costs, we're into water rights like $32 million. And we need to try to recover this quicker. And so the thought was, we need to use 100% rather than 50%
to monetize
that quickly.
Like we were selling it to someone else.
And I'm not totally remembering the exact logic of why we decided to go this other way, but it really is more defensible by covering all of that cost as soon as we can and getting. And so what that does is that takes our water right impact fee from like $33,400 or something ish to about $6,800. It just doubles it. Then the other thing that we...
So I didn't understand, so it increases
it? It increases it because what we said is half of your water is going to come out of these expensive water rights we acquired to get us going. The other half is going to come out of Weber Basin contract water out of Lost Canyon, which you don't pay an impact fee as paid at rates. So we can't... So the thought was, let's just use all of new development, let them use the expensive water we bought, instead of splitting it into...
So now
that doubles the fee for the water right component.
So, and there's some additional nuances related to the credit that they still want.
Bear with us, and this will all come together a little later, but financially, this is a more prudent way.
When we start talking about this credit that now exists, and I'll do my best at explaining this.
Well, wait one second.
Okay.
I'll be done. Yeah. The other thing that we did in the version that you have, we believed we were doing so well that our future projects, we would never have debt to pay for any of them. But that's pretty short-sighted. What we're saying is in the next 10 years, the economy's going to be good for 10 years. And we don't know that. In fact, Susie was telling us they're predicting there's going to be some, it's not going to stay that like that for 10 years. So we decided to impose a debt service factor on the future projects.
This was Susie's suggestion?
Yeah. And really, if we looked at any other impact fee facility plan in the state, they would do the same thing. They would just assume, you're going to pay some debt on it. And so we used a debt service factor of 1.75. You can see it right here. And what that did is it increased like the source improvements from $3 million to $5.3 million. And that carries through on storage and on distribution. So those are the two, really only two things that are different. They just change the table amount. And what that does... What was the one that they were looking at? It was 9,000?
Yeah, 9,243.
So now it takes it to 13,645.
With the credit.
With the asterisk.
Okay, with the asterisk.
Yeah.
Now Lisa's going to explain the credit. And the credit is an analysis that you haven't seen, that none of us isn't completed yet.
So, as there's kind of two parts to this process. So Doug's preparing the impact fee facility plan, and then the second part that Zions prepares for us is the impact fee analysis. So as we've started working with Susie on the impact fee analysis side, and Doug's already kind of come up with what those numbers are, and the smaller tables there, we're trying to identify that number by each one of the four components. In the past, I would say the last time we did this impact fee, since the last time we've done this impact fee, there have been some lawsuits that have been brought against entities related to how the impact fee was being calculated, is my understanding. And so now moving forward, this will be our first impact fee kind of since this
this credit has been kind of talked about. And where the credit really comes from is, if you go up, scroll up a little bit, Doug. So when, or just to one where we can see the three columns, percent to existing, percent to 10-year, and percent to beyond. So as we're calculating the impact fee, we're calculating a percentage in this 10-year growth window. So Doug's assigning, when we're calculating the impact fee, we're just looking at who is in that 10-year window, and we're assigning costs to our impact fee based on that. So when we're doing that, we're also including things that we've already purchased. So, for example, we're talking about water rights. So we've already purchased water rights, but we're still servicing debt on that. And if you're coming into the district, you should be helping to pay a portion of that. And then you're also going to pay for new projects that we need to do in order to support the growth that comes along with that. So this lawsuit stemmed from, we're doing that calculation, but impact fees aren't perfect. They're not coming in at the right time like you expect. So what ends up happening is you end up collecting, in order to service your debt, you have to collect it in rates. So the developers were coming back and saying, hey, wait a second, you're charging me twice, because you're charging me in the impact fee for the existing portion of that debt that you bought into related to those assets that you've already acquired, and for the new projects that you need to construct. But you also have existing debt that we've assigned in that existing column that now you're asking me to pay through rates that, to make up the difference. So what came out of that is this impact fee credit. So what you do is, when working with Zions, is we take all of our existing debt related to these projects. So all of our, we have four bonds outstanding. And we say, how much of that we're still paying on is applicable to existing customers that really these new customers coming on would be paying for twice if they also were picking that up in rates. It's very confusing. I'm doing the best to try to explain it. Please jump in if someone has.
You're doing good right now.
I think you're doing really good. Okay. It's hard to, it took me a little bit of time to understand, to make sure I understood how the double dipping was occurring. So what we have to do, we basically look at all of our debt going forward, what's the remaining amortization schedule look like, and then we take that percent to existing customers and we apply that portion. We basically give them a credit for that. So then what you have to do is take the net present value of that remaining debt and push it into the year and whenever that impact fee comes in. So doing the calculation on our remaining debt, the majority of that debt is the $27 million bond that we issued in the very beginning to get Mountain Regional up and going, and we still owe $20 million on that bond. And that goes out until 2032-33, so we still have quite a bit of time on that. So that's where the majority of the credit is coming from. So to jump back to Doug's...
Because the rate, if they pay the rate, they pay it on that bond.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Who's getting this credit?
The credit is going to customers that will be coming in and paying the impact fee.
They
don't have to
everybody
pay the rate.
For creation of capacity that is excess today, and we're all paying for that. And anybody who knew it, should be paying everybody else for the excess capacity that they've been carrying in order to make it available to these people who join later.
Right, and we're calculating that when we break it out into these three columns. So we're designating what percent is for existing, what percent is for that 10-year window.
So we're saying this portion of this project is related to you coming in at this point, and you're buying into that. So we're already...
But if that's what each project is incremental, or it's standalone, not incremental, it's the next project in the line unless you've got everything else already in place.
No.
I guess
if you add another customer and new subdivision next, if you don't have the pipeline coming from Lost Canyon down, you know, it's profitable, right?
Right, and we're calculating that in Doug's spreadsheet.
They have to pay on the incremental. They have to pay a part of the payment.
Right, which is what she's showing in that three columns.
But Bob can't see.
Yeah.
Bob, the way I kind of thought about it that helped me a little bit is if we stopped it right now and never collected another impact fee, the only way
we never added another customer,
all the debt that's existing, we'd have to service through rates, and we wouldn't get any more impact fees to help pay for it. So as you have new customers come on, they get a credit for that existing debt that they're now paying in rates like everybody else. But they also still have to pay the impact fee for the additional pressure they're putting on the system. Does that kind of make sense? I mean, my brain doesn't know it. So if you kind of freeze it right now, we were never going to get an impact fee. Everybody who's existing would pay all that debt just through rates. So we'd have to increase our rates to whatever it was to serve the debt. So new people coming on, they are going to be servicing that old debt through the rates because they're paying the same rates as the existing customers. So they're helping service that through their rates. So they don't have to service it through their impact fee because their impact fee just pays for their additional demand on the system. And that's why you have to do this net present value calculation so you don't end up charging them in rates and an impact fee.
Yeah.
Instead
of having to charge two different rates, they give them a credit for the portion of the rate that is part of that rate.
Yeah.
So let's say it was $5 a month for 10 years, you do the net present value of that $5 a month.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. But in my mind, the system was that the system was built not to serve an existing customer who existed on day one. Okay? Well, was to provide water to a portion of the county, the expansion of which was not entirely known at any given point in time, but which had to be robust enough to service all of this potential expansion that existed because people had property. We weren't just building a system for, you know...
For the first 100 customers, yeah.
To, you know, whatever state of health they were in, they came together to form non-regional. We were building it for the east, or west side of the county. And therefore, to me, it's, you know, whether you join, you know, today, or whether you join 10 years ago, we all have an equal responsibility because that whole system was built so that everybody could have equal rights to water.
And Bob, I think that we are...
That incremental cost can't exist without the base. And I understand what you're saying about the rate, okay? But, you know, the rate doesn't cover all of the debt service to give us because all of those people pay impact fees too.
The one good thing about tonight is we don't have to adopt the impact fee. I mean, we're going to have another work session on this, and we can talk through that more on getting to the dollar amount.
Right.
So we're a little bit ahead of it because, yeah, this is pretty complicated stuff as Susie explained it because Lisa and I were both beating our head on this for a while until we kind of got what she was saying. And at one point in time, I was like, I think you can make an argument that you don't have to do the credit, but it's where it's landed with the lawsuits kind of thing. But fortunately, since we found on the water source component that we, even though we'd spent $30 million, basically we were only calculating the impact fee off of $15 million. And we realized that was a mistake. So we get to add back basically all the credit we're going to be giving people. So our impact fee is going to be almost the same as it is right now. We hadn't been doing it that this way, but in a way we'd always been people giving people credit because we hadn't been charging them enough for the water right, is really what it was. Because whether that money was all being... We'd spent that money.
The problem with our American and all these developers get together too, but who represents the public?
Oh, you're a Republican.
Dave's doing the best he can, Bob. We keep him working hard, but.
Right. Anyway, okay, I won't sidetrack it anymore. It's not the final word on this.
And I can, it's not the final word, and I can share my, you know, my look at it. Sometimes we all look at things a little bit differently, and my, the way that I've understood it is, when Mount Regional was formed, we took on a significant amount of debt, and, you know, a significant amount of customers that did not pay an impact fee to come on to Mount Regional. All of that debt is paid for, was started to be paid for through rates. Those rates, that component of the debt is still in the rate. So when a new customer comes on, that new customer is paying for that debt through their rate, but they're also paying for that same debt through this, through an impact fee based on our percent to 10-year growth allocation for their portion of that debt. So as Lisa explained the double dipping to me, that's what resonated with me, that the reason that they get a credit back is because they're paying for the debt twice.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
So the cool thing is the preliminary numbers get us back to about where we started.
Yeah, the impact fee doesn't really change.
Yes.
But like Steve said, we're in preliminary discussions with science. Susie's going to start, you know, drafting up a document. We're planning to have our first review with that is in September. And she'll be here to review that with us. And we weren't planning to adopt any fees until October. So we still have some time to work through this. The IFFP simply lays out the projects and the level of service that we anticipate.
That's cool.
Okay.
And to circle back on this 50% factor on the water rights, part of the argument is that how is it justifiable that we are going to credit new customers that are coming on are getting this impact fee credit because of this double dipping situation, right? We're paying for the debt on all of the water rights, all the debt we have related to water rights. How is it justifiable that we're cutting that debt in half and only asking them to contribute towards half of the water rights? So essentially, they're getting credited they're getting over-credited if we apply this 50% reduction to our water rate debt due to this Lost Canyon versus where the water comes from. So the concept was we have debt related to water rights. That debt is, again, is paid for through rates. It's also paid for through impact fees. If we're going to credit the new customers back the rate portion of, or credit them back the double dip, then they don't get a 50% credit on the total water rate debt. They get an overinflated credit.
Yeah,
no,
I get all the
water. Does it matter if it's water rights or tanks or pumps or pipes or your any?
Well,
my only point is, if you were going to build a water system to service the original, you know, people,
sufficient. You know. Anyway, we'll take it up.
One of the nice things is by adjusting that water rate,
give me more time to think about.
If you proportionally, so the four components that you made a pie chart out of it, that really is how our debt would look. It's half of our debt is going to water rates.
Yeah.
Because, Bob, if you go back up to the very top...
Mortgage to distribution.
Sorry, you can't see this, Bob, but if you go all the way back up to the top, when you were talking about that $32 million, so we were getting to this $32 million number, and that's money that's spent on water rates. And so to just say, well, we were basically saying, yeah, cutting that in half... And getting to our 8.5 million that for the current customers, and then halving that, but we don't get a half our debt. The debt's still the same, and so that's where she kind of said, "No, your debt doesn't change. Yeah, you're getting some of your water from Weber Basin lease fees, but you haven't changed how much it costs you to buy the water rights you have in place already anyway." But we were kind of acting like it did. Does that make sense?
We're kind of giving a credit.
Yeah, we historically we're giving credit, probably where we maybe didn't need to. But
which is about the amount of credit would be.
Well, yeah.
Because that's a significant portion.
So we were always ahead, we just didn't know it.
So let's circle back on the main components of the impact fee facility plan and what we're really asking for tonight. So as Lisa mentioned, it's establishing the level of service. It's identifying the growth that we expect over the next 10 years. It's identifying the projects that we expect to build over those 10 years. What am I missing? Those are really the main components that go into the impact fee facilities plan. The impact fee analysis is then the financial calculations to determine what the impact fee is. Doug has gone ahead and completed some of that financial analysis here to facilitate our discussions, but it's really Zion's responsibility to complete that analysis.
That's why I call it, this is our gross fee. This net other study will end up in a net impact fee.
Okay, so do we have any more discussion on the IFFP? Are we ready? So we're looking for a recommendation.
We're in front of council next. We're on the agenda for the 17th to do a work session with council discussing our IFFP. We will take their comments along with our board's comments, and we'll make any changes necessary, and a public hearing will be held on August 7th. For the county council to adopt the IFFP.
So that's, Mike, are you going to that on Tuesday?
Yes, on the 23rd.
That's a separate meeting.
This one's the 17th.
The 17th the staff will be there. We're working through all of our policy, getting all of our policy changes adopted, and also it's the IFFP work session.
Okay, so I think what we need is a recommendation from the control board, the governing board, for the approval of the IFFP.
Correct.
Are we ready to do that?
Well, do we have to wait on Zion's report? Their audit?
The IFFP is separate, so this IFFP will be actually approved by the county council. And then the impact fee analysis report prepared by Zions is then approved by the board.
I'm good. The council doesn't even look at the analysis.
No. They says no.
And there'll be more time for Bob to walk through his concern following this.
On the impact fee, yeah.
So all of the financial analysis is performed in the IFFA, or impact fee analysis. So Bob will have more time to work through his concerns.
Do
We are, in some ways, we are providing the structure from which that analysis is performed by approving the IFOP.
Yeah. Facilities plan informs the impact analysis. Okay, so do we have a motion to recommend the governing board approve the impact fee facility plan?
Would we call it a draft at this point?
No, I think the facility plan is complete.
Yeah, we're done with the facility plan.
Because you're just recommending it for consideration by the council.
It's just a list of projects.
Yeah. The analysis, which you will see in more detail, I think is the more complicated part.
Yeah.
For me, I just want to count up.
Yeah, if you didn't think the list of projects was good, or you didn't think the ERC calculation was good, that would be the moment we would talk about that tonight, but the fee is later. But it's like, oh, why aren't we building more, or why are we building this much? Sorry, that's kind of the conversation.
I think this, if you want, what may help is I can, we can pull out my slides that we'll present to council next week on what we're asking their approval on. Or if you're comfortable with the information you have, you can skip it.
Right, that was draft last month. Okay, so where are we at? Do we want to talk about the facilities plan a little bit more? Do we have any questions there?
I guess I still have some uncertainty. If this is the framework that sets up the analysis, and Bob has an issue with that.
I think that Bob's issue is more is how is that fee calculated. But I think that the facility plan is really just a list of projects.
Okay.
And that's what feeds the costs into.
So it's not the framework for the analysis. It's just the backbone.
It's just
the assumptions.
It's the costs.
You still tweak the analysis and deal with all of Bob's issues. Okay.
Exactly. The facilities is the list of the projects and how much they cost.
So is that just like included in storage and distribution? Isn't that the only thing you can make facilities for is storage? And
well, or do we need to buy more water rights or where?
We have like some water source projects.
Well, and determining what the ERC is, I mean, it's that whole, wasn't it 62 pages that we read from the last meeting?
Yeah. And do we have a new facility? So what do we need? Right? So, I'm ready for a motion to approve or to recommend the impact fee facility plan be approved by the governing board. But is anybody else?
So I had no disagreement with what was shown in the facility plan.
That's where we're at.
Didn't have an opportunity to disagree with anything that was missing from the facility plan. So if the assumption that everything's in the facility plan is supposed to be there, I didn't disagree with anything in there.
Right, and it's a living document. It's probably may not have everything in it because we don't know.
I hate to use the word cool. That's not a good. It's something that could be looked at every year if they want.
We
anticipate doing that from now on, is reviewing this every year, every couple of years, because things change.
Things are changing more rapidly.
We at least have a plan now. By the time we're done, we will have the framework of a plan that's easy to modify.
Yeah, just like 10 years from now, an ERC may be different because...
Well, what we have a hard time seeing, no matter how hard we've looked at these projects 100 times, what we have a hard time dealing with is if the county developer, all of a sudden there's some big project coming that we did not anticipate.
Yeah.
And that's when a lot of times you got to go, well, we got to come back and look at this. Yes.
Or you lose a source or storage. You know, they always, you can have things happen,
yeah.
You know, where you need to regroup and redo your plan.
Okay, are there any other questions? Mm-hmm. Ready for a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the impact fee facilities plan.
The governing board approved the impact fee facility plan.
Yes.
That was made by Karen. Like I heard Bob second it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed. So that was unanimous.
Karen made the motion, Bob made the second, and all in favor, yes.
Okay, well, thank you. It's done. That's a big chore.
Yeah.
It'll be easier in the future.
Yeah.
The stuff she talks about gives me a headache.
But we might have to call you every now and then. So, item 10, we have Dave. Any legal?
The only updates are, you know, things that were kind of part of community water but weren't. The Summit Water Interconnect is still not signed, nor are the Vail Lodges supply agreement signed. They are now in some in-between land, I guess, as TCFC undergoes changes in management. So I don't know when we're going to see those. I know that Summit Water tentatively approved the interconnect at their board meeting, but they had some conditions that were on their approval based on agreements that they had with TCFC and American Skiing Company years ago. So we don't really know what those are, but I've been told that Dave Smith, who is now doing the review for TCFC, that he's got those documents and is perusing them. So we'll just see what happens.
Andy Garland did call me, and he said he had no heartburn at all with the agreements. In fact, I believe he has signed them and submitted them back to TCFC. He said, in these conditions, the way he explained them to me, sound like they're insignificant, but there's many layers of review, and insignificant things seem to, at times, be made to be more significant.
Okay, well, that kind of sounds like it's just more of the same.
Yeah, and I mean, at some point in time, Vail's probably going to be wanting to turn on the water at their lodges and wonder why there isn't any water.
Should we?
We should.
Yeah, they're not paying for it.
We could shut off the valve.
That'll probably be in November, right?
They do weddings in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that we're going to have to get out ahead of this a little bit. We don't want some fire drill in the beginning of November.
Or before some bridezilla's wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
We should just, at this point in time, we should shut off the water. They're no longer...
Yes,
I
agree.
We need to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I thought we did that.
Totally agree, yeah.
Just
bring it to a head.
I'm not sure what we do, because if they turn something on, the valve's off.
Well, I think they own it past the meter.
I agree.
Should we at least give them notice?
Give them a heads up, yeah. So they don't hurt anybody, but yeah. It's their system, and if it breaks, that's their issue.
Yeah, none of us want to contribute to their water, right? In a race.
Okay. Who do we notify?
Probably Bill Rock.
So if you have that contact date.
the Rocket Dave Smith.
And the justification is you don't have an agreement to be serving water. Right. There's no
Nobody's paying for the water.
And they're probably pulling water right now if anybody sees these bills.
They were getting it from community water, and that's...
They didn't.
They went away because community water dissolved.
Community water dissolved.
Yep.
So a couple things, just based on comments that have come in just now. One is, the only usage that's up there in the summer is potentially a wedding or two. It doesn't change the fact that the water should be shut off.
Yes.
But nobody's continuously using water up there. That infrastructure we don't own. That infrastructure becomes its own water system. That water system has not been filed for, if you will, with the Division of Drinking Water to our knowledge.
Is it just to the lodges? Because there's other facilities.
It's only to the Sun Peak Lodge, the Lodge, you know, Skier's Left as you come down from the bubble, top of the bubble chair.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a restaurant there, right?
Yeah, and then the Lookout Lodge is at the top of it's the shortcut chair, I think they call it, the chair that...
That's where the first bubble stop is.
Yes, correct. Those two lodges.
Sweet.
Let's turn it off.
But there's other facilities up there, so they just get water from other sources?
They're served by the Sun of Water.
Okay.
And non-regional on the far liberal left side of the mountain.
Okay, that's good, Dave. Thank you. So, Scott, you want to
a couple things. So, I've got two updates here. I'll take the mic back from Dave. So, the first update I have is related to the Red Hawk easement. So, following last board meeting, I received a phone call, a voicemail, from a property owner who lives at the top of Glenwild in the area that's going to be served by the new water line once it's installed. And he was just looking for an update on the project. He had heard from the property management group that manages Glenwild that we were going to be doing some water line work. So I gave him a shout back and basically said, we've got a project where we're going to be improving the level of service to your area, but we're held up at this point due to trying to get an easement on the Red Hawk side of the construction project. And he said, you know, which property is it that you need the easement on? I let him know what it was, and he responded by saying that he's close friends with that property. So his recommendation was, he's a developer, he has experience in exactly what we're trying to do. Why don't we go out and do a site visit and take a look at what we're trying to do so he can understand the impact to this property. So Chris and I met him on site. We had a really good meeting, walked the alignment, explained what the impacts were going to be, and his recommendations were to stake the alignment, stake the center line alignment of the water line, have Chris draft up the easement documentation, get it to him, and then he would reach out to the property owner when they were back in town and meet with them on site and explain to them what we were really asking for. And that's really the basis of the meeting. Another thing that was talked about was...
So who is this guy?
Yep.
Do you have the right to go in and say that that property might be considered to be trespassing? I defer to Dave on what the rights are to walk up on somebody's property.
Because it's not the guy's property. Who did you meet with?
Have his neighbor do it.
It's a good point, Bob. We've gone up and staked the alignment of the water line. It's by staking we're talking about putting, it's no impact to the property itself.
Damages.
Yeah.
I get it. Anyway, be careful, huh?
Okay.
Sometimes people get their back up and something doesn't seem you know, seems pretty innocuous and turn out to be a major.
I think Bob's point's a good one. I can see the wrong person get completely fired up over that, so we should be careful there.
Okay. So, furthering the discussion, we talked about landscaping for some mitigation of our impacts. I offered $5,000 towards landscaping on this person's property to mitigate the impacts. As you recall, there was another alignment that was contemplated to go up the asphalt road another 500 feet. That cost is expected to be well north of $40,000. I was comfortable with the small impact mitigation money that I offered. And these property owners are expected to be back in town next week. The gentleman that lives in Glen Wild who has a relationship with these property owners is planning on meeting with them. Chris has already given the easement documentation to him, and I'll expect an update next week.
And if that doesn't work, then we start the next process?
Yep, that's correct.
Which is what?
Condemn.
Yeah. You know, the gentleman who knows these folks, his position is that he does not think this is going to be a big issue as soon as they understand exactly what it is we're trying to do.
Do you have a picture? Can you have a?
Can you pull up Google Maps, maybe, with this internet connection?
Well, it sounds like we're...
This is a bad internet. I don't know. We'll be sitting there.
Let's go on to the...
I couldn't even log in.
Yeah.
It wouldn't even let me through.
So let's go on to the Gorgoza.
I think we're on a good course of action.
Okay, so moving forward to the Gorgoza agreement. We received a call 3 weeks ago or so from the contractor doing the roundabout project. And he said, your water line is in the way, you're going to have to lower it. So essentially that meant, I don't know, the impacted area is probably 500 feet or so. You can see the dotted red line in the exhibit there. We were faced with...
So how did that happen?
Yeah.
Was their survey off or was our survey off? Because there was no impact originally.
Correct. What we were told is that there was very little impact to the finished grade of the project through the area where we expected our water line to be. Now, I think there were a couple of issues. One is, I don't believe we knew or anybody knew the exact location of our water line and the exact versus the exact grade changes that they had planned. Secondly, I get the sense, and Brian, you've met with the contractor a couple of times, I get the sense that some of the rough grading they're doing is a little different than the finished product grading that will, you know what I mean? The finished state.
They're going deeper.
So they're going deeper to facilitate the construction, and we were going to have, what, a foot of cover over our pipe?
The finished grade would have been 4 feet. Which?
4 feet to top of pipe.
Yeah. We weren't comfortable with that. But like I said, originally we were told that this is not going to mess our volumes.
So how much did it come down, actually?
Well, during the rough grade, our pipe's going to have like a foot of cover on it.
Yeah. But
they've taken that area down huge.
And they stopped where our pipeline is, so they haven't taken it on yet.
I'd actually started thinking about that when they're cutting through there. That just seemed... I couldn't believe our pipe was that deep.
But what rights did we have in the road to start with?
A franchise.
Yeah, it's a franchise agreement. That's exactly right. So, at the county...
Did you say French fries?
Yeah. Franchise agreement. So, at the county's discretion, we can be asked to move or relocate a water line with 60 days notice per the franchise agreement.
Yep. But on whose cost, though?
At our cost. So... And given the timeline of the contractor said, you've got to figure out a solution by the end of the month. So we know how bidding water lines is going. Trying to get a contractor in to replace that water line over the next 3 weeks was going to be a challenge. So Brian went out and met with Gorgoza, the Gorgoza Water Company, and talked about
potential solutions, because the reality is that the black line in the image is a water line that Mountain Regional purchased from Gorgoza back in 2003, and Gorgoza serves customers along the length of that water line. So in essence, it's a bit of a shared water line to begin with. So the solution that came up was, well, it's an 8-inch line, that's the red dotted line. Why don't we just abandon that and let's jump on the Gorgoza system and utilize their 8-inch line that goes through that new Tomlin complex. So I sat down with the leaders of Gorgoza and talked about our interest in doing that. And the way that I presented it was, we have a known amount of capacity that we need to move through the Kilby pump station, and we know what that water line is rated to move. So Mountain Regional would like to purchase what amounted to be 61% of the capacity in that line.
And so the blue line is existing?
Blue line is existing, and it's a new line. It's brand new. It was just put in last year.
Is the black line ours?
The black line is ours. It's also existing. And the red line is the area of the impacted area that we need to find a solution for.
I see.
Who's the is the contractor working under contract to UDOT?
Dave, can you answer that question?
I think it's
Stryker.
I don't know if it's under UDOT or the county. I mean, the state is participating. I think it's with the county.
But I guess what I'm wondering is, why didn't the owner of that project come and tell us that? Why was it the contractor?
I don't care about
it. I can't answer that. I don't know.
Okay, so
I mean, does the owner even know about this?
Yes, they do.
I'm just wondering, normally, if they're under contract to UDOT or the county or something, and they had that issue, they'd bring it to the county or UDOT, try to get some relief, in which case mm-hmm. UDOT would come to the water company and discuss it with you. So it just seemed a little fishy to me that you're being contacted by the contractor. I was just wondering if UDOT or the county knows about this under excavation that's going on and sanctioned it. And is that the reason we're in this fix?
The county is definitely aware. I reached out to Derek Radke, who's the head of public works, who's really the lead over this project, is my understanding, and let him know that, you know, basically said, I don't know if you're being kept up to speed, but, you know, this is our potential solution to keep you moving. And he said he had been kept up to speed on what was going on. So, yes, he was aware of it.
I'm just thinking that maybe conveniently stepping aside and letting this kind of work itself out rather than getting in the mix of it. If you're okay, yeah. It just seems a little strange that a contractor that is under contract to build this thing and gets all their contractual relief through their contract isn't taking that contractual relief through the county or UDOT rather than coming directly.
So I think kind of how it works, it's the county's right of way. Mm-hmm. And so we're in there sort of with their permission. And they're making changes, and they're coming to us and saying, you know, we're gonna end up with a foot of cover on this thing.
And the finished product is going to be 4 feet of cover.
4 feet of cover. And it's more, you know, yeah, they're using the avenue through the contractor to tell us that. But no. I guess they don't have an obligation to tell us, you know, what they're doing in their own right of way.
I'm just suggesting that maybe the design on the plans was fine, but for some reason they've over-excavated. And
contractors screwed up and more paper.
Well, I wouldn't say they screwed up. I mean, they could always put the dirt back in there. But they've over-excavated for some reason, and maybe
so the finished grade is, it's got 4 feet, but it could have 3 feet of roadway section between the asphalt, you know, then there's road base, and then there's
seen that in some states where they have a
4 foot section.
They have 5 foot of frost penetration.
I think at the end of the day, there were two primary concerns that we had. One was, let's forget about rough grading for a second. Let's assume we can get by with a foot of cover while they're doing their work and
they own that property.
Well, that's not good.
What's that?
That's not good.
They could plate it. They could.
Well, they're supposed to protect it, place to
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, they could.
The finished grade of 4 feet, and the grade change was only about a foot, I think, in the finished product, which is consistent with what we heard at the design phase, that the grade wasn't going to change more than a foot.
So you go from 5 to 4.
Yes. But the issue was, is the pipe, you know, I think is shallower than what we had originally expected. I think in the beginning they said, well, we can lose 6 to 12 inches of cover, no big deal. We find out when they pop over where the line really is, the line's got 5 feet of cover. We lose a full foot, we get to 4 feet of cover, or it was, you know, it's a 4 feet of cover, and that was a significant concern to us.
So we thought we had more than 5.
Yeah, I mean, our construction standards are 6 feet to top of pipe for that elevation. This was done many, many, many years ago.
This was actually done by Southridge when Doily developed Southridge and they didn't have enough water with that little well on the side of the interstate. So this was how Southridge actually bought shares from Gergoza, and they laid that water line to Southridge. And when we at Summit Park and Timberline needed water, that's how we got water to Summit Park. They kind of gave us that line, and it was the Southridge line that they constructed with a water resource along, like back in.
Well, I understand the facts that you're proposing. I understand what's going on there. First, I thought maybe we were talking about there was some sort of betterment that was going on. But then I realized that this pipe that we had told them was going to be at some elevation, it's now at a higher elevation, but they maybe have cut further down than they should have. Normally those contracts say the contractor is responsible for protecting utilities in place.
Yeah.
They're going to move them. So it just looked like it had a pretty high price tag on it. If you don't like the fact that it's going to have less than 6 foot cover when it's done, you should probably do this.
Yeah, and the other concern I had was, or that having an old water line through a brand new roundabout, if there was a way to get into new infrastructure outside of the alignment of the roundabout, I also saw that as a benefit. So the two concerns were essentially that we weren't going to have the finished, at the end of the day when the project was done, we weren't going to have the cover that we want to have over that pipe. And secondly, we prefer to not have a pipe through the roundabout alignment to begin with.
That's kind of a different issue, because I think what you're saying is, but for this contractor coming to you and saying you got to remove it, you wouldn't have pursued that. But it sounds to me like that now that you've thought through it, well, this is a better solution. So it just kind of makes me wonder what was driving the decision in the first place. So if the contractor hadn't come to you and said remove it,
we weren't going to touch it. The decision, the driver of the decision was the cover of the pipe when it was all said and done.
Okay.
Having 4 feet of cover wasn't enough. I mean, that was the...
To change condition. Yeah, the situation.
Yeah. We didn't know exactly what we had, which is typical. There's many water lines. We don't know exactly where they are or exactly how deep they are.
Okay. So that's your update.
So to further the update, what we said is we approached Gergoza and asked them to purchase capacity in their infrastructure. The key points would be that they would own, operate, maintain their line. They have services off of it. I wanted to keep the ownership in their court. We would purchase the capacity. They presented installation costs for that water line. I pushed back, and I felt they were high. They reduced them to a level that I was comfortable with at $80 a foot. There's a significant amount of rock X through that alignment to put that line in.
How deep is their line?
Good question. I don't know.
Maybe that's why we weren't 6 feet. All that rock X. You say there's rock there?
Yeah.
This should be where our line originally was. The hillside dives pretty steeply right there.
Well, you can see the significant grade
of rock and minerals there.
Okay, so
at least, to answer your question, Ian, I gotta believe it's at least 5 feet. All of us have different standards. Some of water standards are 5 feet, ours are 6.
Should we check that just to make sure we're comfortable?
Ryan, can you reach out to them? Or I can reach out to Scott.
So we pay 61% of the maintenance.
Yeah, it's 40.
We pay half the cost of the, just to cut to the chase here, we pay half the cost of the abandonment, and then they abandon the 120,000-gallon well.
They had 120,000 gallons of storage in a tank in Summit Park. They're relinquishing that storage.
Yeah.
We're also abandoning a line in Bull Canyon that's a potential water quality hazard.
Oh, that line doesn't go to the tank. That's a different line.
That was an old conveyance path from our storage tank into their system. If they don't need the storage anymore, then they don't need the conveyance path. That was the
gotcha.
That was the logic.
Yeah, it's a staggered line. Water doesn't go down. It's kind of dangerous.
Well, it sounds like you're doing the best you can with the situation at hand. Right? You don't need approval from us.
No, it's just an update. Yep. It's a total cost of $43,000. We're going to split it in two payments. If we were to put a new water line through that alignment, it would have been significantly more than that. And we're also getting rid of some old obligations that, quite frankly, I'm happy to get rid of.
Okay.
Cool.
Anything else? See? Other?
That's all I have.
So I saw that Doug was going to, we have a retirement party going up on the 31st. That's a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Really like to be there, but I think I'm going to be out of town.
I'm out of town as well.
It's okay.
Sorry, Doug.
Can you reschedule?
No, I'm a huge part of this whole thing. So then we've been talking a little bit about an agenda for the commissioners meeting with the county council.
Yeah.
On the
23rd. Yeah.
At 8:30.
Yeah. I'm a much nicer person if I exercise in the morning.
So are you, is that another way you want to? Because I just want to be prepared for what we talk about.
Yeah, I understand. I had not put a lot of time into it because I was preparing a packet for the council meeting next on the 17th
okay.
for policies and for the IWP. Really, the purpose of setting up the meeting was to discuss the rate that we expect to adjust to Weaver Basin for the master agreement.
On the 23rd.
On the 23rd.
Okay. And then we've said we're just getting that up to a market rate, which
correct.
Is what we charge other, who else do we charge that?
The concept is to deliver it at a rate that when Summit Water adds their cost of doing business to get it to their customers, it lands at a rate similar to our retail rate. That's the concept. That is a potential increase of essentially twice what the company is.
That's
And the other topics, Mike, that you suggested, I'll start working on those and kind of putting together an agenda.
Yeah, I just didn't want those to get in front of your priorities. So, okay, and then I was thinking about the Intermountain section, the UWDVA conference, and I brought a couple copies of the some of the program. Right? There's some good stuff. I don't know if I can make it or not. But
okay.
Thanks for that. There's some good. Okay. So is there anything else?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, 7:57 will be adjourned. Yeah, thanks, everybody.
It's always nice to leave when it's still light out.
Right.
I'm driving home in the dark for most of the year.
Hey, thanks, Bob. We're adjourned. Yeah, have a great night. See you, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Everybody's getting hot.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Hey, Dave, you're going to come right to get Doug's.
I'm going to try to make it. I've got a... I got council, and they're having a site visit to Promise Quarry. It is close. So I'm hoping... Promontory wants to amend their development agreement.
Oh, this for the 22,000?
Yeah,
there's a lot of good stuff.
South Point, they want to have the ability to go above the 8,000 square foot house provision and go to 22,000 square feet. And they want to make sure that they've got a gate dividing the millionaires from the billionaires. We have lots of people come to the last meeting with the county.
So now they
want to
do that on South Point too?
Yes, they want to have these 22,000 square foot homes, and then they have a gate to cut it off from the rest.
They were probably hoping that.
So we would need to drive there to get out.
But that would come in a good plan to take basically a good right.
Yeah.
And so what they when I think back to
we talked about this a year or two ago.
Give someone off putting the casing out there.
And then there's an hour, 100 plus.
Wait, so I have another question about that. What does that net zero? There was some term.
You know, now all these developments have happened,
like,
and now
net zero.
Oh, what I see.
And I wasn't sure.
We don't want to spend
that money.
What I see is an opportunity to spend $43K get into brand new
credit
out of the order and complete the roundabout and get rid of some other stuff. I'll set it down if we don't make a decent deal.
You're supposed to have a zero carbon system.
Can you do that with that solar panel?
You have to set rules.
I have no idea.
They have to.
I mean, you can buy in there and rock it out of towers.
And it'll say, awful passage drivers.
I suppose that. If you got the money to build it, or we probably have lots of money to do
a yard park.
There's stuff that can't be
protected.
Just so you know, if any of that is approved in any way, we'd have to amend our water agreement.
But he might want to just kind of stay out of it.
Well,
there's a lot of things I thought to stay out of too.
Right. So,
okay.
I don't want to poke it up there.
22,000
square feet.
And there's no use in
capacity.
Okay.
Because
that stretch that we're talking about, it's suburban. I don't know what's going on in software. From a regional standpoint, that only water only has so much pump stations.
Doug, do we need to rearrange the tables some way, or how were they when?
They were lined up like this.
Was this cord here, or no,
that's ours?
Oh, no, I can show you that. He said, sorry, I'm going to wait out the other side if you're going to water.
Yeah. Was it? These things are really bad.
It was really bad. We were at Palmer just north of that acreage. I was like,
so what are your plans after the 31st?
Two rows of two?
Yeah, maybe you should go back farther. Or were there three tables?
I think they're on the water line. Two rows.
Doug, do you know how to stop this?
How do you grow?
I grew up with the paper left
line. Does anyone know how to stop this?
When I told him I could go down, I saw